In sports, Jacksonville Jaguars owner Wayne Weaver says the club has been informed that offensive tackle Richard Collier has undergone surgery at a local hospital after being shot early this morning and is in critical but stable condition. According to a Jacksonville Sheriff's Office spokesman, Collier and former Jaguars defensive end Kenneth Petway were waiting in a car for two women they had met in a nightclub when a gunman fired into the vehicle. Authorities say Petway was not injured. Fifth-seeded Elena Dementieva defeated 15th-seeded Patty Schnieder 6-2, 6-3 today at the U.S. Open quarterfinals. The Russian is two wins away from following up her gold medal performance at the Beijing Olympics with a championship in New York. Tiger Woods has announced on his website that his wife is pregnant for a second time and Ellen is expecting in late winter. Woods has spent the last few months recuperating from reconstructive surgery on his left knee and is not expected back on the golf course until January at the earliest. John Danks will get the start for the Chicago White Sox tonight as they try to hold on to the top spot in the AL Central. The Sox are continuing a three-game series in Cleveland after losing 5-0 yesterday. The Chicago Cubs' lead in the NL Central allows them not to panic despite being in the middle of their longest losing streak at Wrigley Field in more than a year. Carlos Zambrano will take the mound tonight as the Cubs look to avoid a fourth straight home loss when they continue their three-game series against Houston. The NL West leading Arizona Diamondbacks continue their series against the struggling St. Louis Cardinals tonight. The Cards will go with Adam Wainwright, who is 7-3 this season and will try to help St. Louis snap a four-game slide. Tony Dungy expects Peyton Manning to start for the Colts in Sunday night's season opener against Chicago. Manning has eased his way back into a normal routine since he started practicing last week, more than a week after having surgery to remove an infected bursa sac from his left knee. And the first episode of the Big Ten Network reality series on Illinois debuts at 8:30 tonight. Camera crews from Illinois football, The Journey, have been following Illini players and coaches for weeks. Coach Ron Zook says he was initially reluctant to let cameras follow him and his players, but decided it would showcase Illinois' resurgence. That's a look at sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, the same square with a new angle, now with shops, offices, activity, and dining facilities, including Pretty Nails and Mr. John's School of Cosmetology.
It's 2:43. Most people probably don't enjoy cleaning, but we've all got to do it. And if you've ever looked at the household cleaner aisle in the grocery store, you know there can be some pretty strong chemicals involved. Karen Kelly reports on a cheaper, chemical-free alternative.
I've just arrived at my neighborhood grocery store with a plan to find what I need to make my own household cleaners. I head over to the cleaning aisle and pull out a list of ingredients I got off the internet. I see borax and washing soda on the shelf. They're both made from naturally occurring minerals and cost about $5 each for a 4 to 5 pound box. I look around for soap flakes to make my own dish soap and find a big bar I can grate myself. The only thing missing is Castile soap. It's a biodegradable soap used in a lot of these recipes. I'll grab that next at the natural food store. To be honest, I never paid that much attention to the ingredients in household cleaner until I used something with dimethyl benzyl ammonium chloride on my bathtub. It comes with warnings. I rinsed it and took a bath. My 4-year-old also took a bath, and we both ended up with a very itchy skin rash. That convinced me I had to find a safer way to clean the tub that, number one, worked, and number two, wasn't too expensive, which pretty much meant I'd have to make it myself. We decided to start with the all-purpose cleaner.
Okay, we need borax, which we have. Castile soap, hot water.
We have that. We can just turn on the sink and make hot water.
And vinegar.
Do we have vinegar?
Yes.
Vinegar, good. And Mom, we have hot water.
We mix up a recipe I found on the David Suzuki Foundation's website. They've got a whole bunch of do-it-yourself recipes for bathtub scrubbers, laundry soap, furniture polish, you name it.
Okay.
Stick it in there. Stir it.
Lindsay Coulter is the person who devised these concoctions. She says a lot of people forget that you don't need fancy products to get your house clean.
You know, if you talk to your grandmothers and your great aunts, you'll find out that they too used things like washing soda, baking soda, white vinegar, and, you know, just a basic castile soap. So things like vinegar are, you know, it's acidic and helps lift grease and deodorizes. And, of course, a lot of the things you're cooking with anyway, so you probably already have it in your kitchen. And the benefit, I mean, just peace of mind that you know actually what goes into it.
But does it work? It's time to find out.
Okay, let's test this out a bit.
We spray. We wipe. The bathroom sink shines. Next, we try the bathtub scrubber. It's a mix of castile soap, vinegar, which is a natural disinfectant, baking soda, and water.
I guess I use some of this to go over there.
Mm-hmm.
Over the drain, too, is good.
Mm-hmm.
The tub looks great, actually. And you know what? This is a lot cheaper. Brand name, all-purpose cleaning sprays are about $4 a bottle where I live. It cost me just a dollar in about 5 minutes to fill that same bottle with my own mix. So it's cheap, it's easy to make, and best of all, I don't have to worry about a chemical reaction after a soak in the tub. For the Environment Report, I'm Karen Kelly.
Is it recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. Have something to say about the Environment Report? Send email to feedback@environmentreport.org.
Death and taxes, Benjamin Franklin once said, are the only things certain in the world. A key difference, of course, is that one makes an annual appearance and the other arrives but once. Unless a newsroom reports a story a bit on the early side. Here's Amy Gotta with this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
The Bloomberg Newswire was the first and only to mourn the passing of Apple Computer Company CEO Steve Jobs last week. Jobs' obituary came across Bloomberg News with this odd first paragraph. Steve Jobs, who helped make personal computers as easy to use as the telephone, has XXXX. He was TK. Odd abbreviation, sure. But odder still is that Steve Jobs is very much alive, thank you. It seems that Bloomberg got the story wrong, sort of, and the abbreviations were meant to be filled in later, perhaps years from now when Jobs actually does die. Oops. Now, you might think to yourself, no harm done. It's good news when bad news isn't bad news at all, just as Mark Twain would say, exaggerated. But consider how you might respond psychologically upon reading of your own demise. Then you might understand why some, upon reading their own obituaries, have turned the page and turned to court. They've sued mostly on defamation grounds, that tort that offers help to those who've had their reputations wrongly dragged through the mud. Defamation occurs when a person is wrongly exposed to public hatred, shame, or ridicule. It's meant to right the wrongs done by those who induce an evil opinion of one in the minds of right-thinking persons. Trouble is, as you may have noted, that death itself isn't defamatory. Cause of death might be, if one's still alive, but death is sadly so ordinary that reputations won't be ruined because of it. Publications that jump the gun on death, in the court's words, might be unpleasant, annoying, and irksome, and may subject the living to jokes, jest, and banter, but they're not enough to sustain a lawsuit, even when the lawsuit is brought on other grounds, like negligent infliction of emotional distress. Courts aren't all that sympathetic for one very obvious reason. While we appreciate the shock that plaintiff must have felt in reading of her death, one court wrote, it was necessarily quickly dissipated by her certain knowledge that the announcement was premature. As for the Steve Jobs too early obituary sent by Bloomberg, Fortune magazine suggests that careful planning was behind the error. Newsrooms often have pre-written obituaries ready to go when a famous person dies. Somebody apparently updated the Steve Jobs obituary that day, the theory goes, and instead of putting it in a file, accidentally sent it off to Newswire subscribers. I imagine the phone in the Bloomberg newsroom started ringing right away. One big reason why Mark Twain also reportedly wrote, I am not the editor of a newspaper and shall always try to do right and be good so that God will not make me one. I'm Amy Gaida.
Amy Gatta is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. Soul is a style of music born in the 1950s. It took over the charts in the 60s, and today it's back. Music journalist Ashley Kahn offers this take on the state of soul music 2008.
If you're talking music, soul is easy to define. It's a gritty vocal style with a feeling straight out of the black church. It's gospel, but with a secular outlook. Soul can have a horn section, sometimes strings, but it doesn't like to get too dressed up. Soul is much more about naked emotion and personal testimony. The rise of soul signified a major shift in popular musical taste throughout America.
By the 60s, soul music was mainstream black pop music and became mainstream American music.
Nelson George has been writing about African-American music and culture for more than 30 years.
Aretha Franklin's You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, Otis Redding, Try a Little Tenderness. There's one idea that is a stereotypical idea of what soul is, which is a almost archival music, that it's music locked into a certain time and place.
Soul music has grown and changed and kept up with the times. Today, it seems to be enjoying a revival.
You know what? It's always been there. You're just hearing about it again.
Sharon Jones is a gospel-trained singer who started performing soul music in the 1970s.
100 days, 100 nights, no woman's heart.
With her band, the Dap Kings, Jones recently released a new album, 100 Days, 100 Nights.
100 days, 100 nights, no woman's heart.
I said, well, isn't soul like black people, you know, like, no, look at my band. White guys, little Jewish guys, and Spanish, you know, got all mixed up there.
Wait a minute. Maybe I need to slow it down just a little. Take my time. I had a man.
100 days.
Tell me things.
Joan's voice can be a formidable force, especially when it shifts an entire song into high gear.
Now, when I do Answer Me, Answer Me, this is soulful. Sweet Jesus, don't you hear? You're grunting with it, and you know what I'm saying? It comes from here. Then the other one, you just be singing, don't you hear me calling you? I need you, Lord. Answer. This, you know, I don't think it's unsoulful, because, you know, but it's just.
But it's more straight.
Yeah, more straight. I think when you go soul, you got to get the ugly face. Soul is singing with the ugly face, no.
Eli Paperboy Reed, a new arrival on the soul scene, already knows how to sing ugly. He's only 24.
This new dance was so loco. Doing this dance from Maine to Mexico. It's the boom boom. Oh, it's the boom boom.
I was never, like, thinking about capitalizing on some sort of soul revival. My music sounds the way it does because my influences are, everybody wears their influences on their sleeve. You know, and I was listening to Drown in My Own Tears, and, you know, or I listened to Pain in My Heart when I was 15 and having to deal with high school girls. You know, for me, that was relevant.
Reed's new album, Roll With Me, is marked by a passionate precision and raw intensity. Eli Reed and Sharon Jones are good examples of soul traditionalists. But there's a lot of good soul singing to be found on today's R&B and pop charts, according to writer Nelson George.
There's a lot of artists today who access soul music as part of what they do. Keisha Cole, who's only like 23 years old, is a soul singer. Certainly Usher is a soul singer. What, let's say, Amy Winehouse is doing.
I told you I was trouble. Yeah, you know that I'm low.
What happened, the soul never really died. It was overcome to some degree by changing production styles. It's really interesting how the pendulum is swinging back. Hip-hop's dominance of black pop culture and the de facto huge role in mainstream pop is slowly ebbing away.
So what is soul today? A full-fledged style, just a flavor? Does it matter? Whether you like it straight up or blended with other musical innovations, there's a sense that soul is always going to be part of the mix.
Now if you want a girl to come to you, you got to leave a little room for guessing.
It's the root. You can't get rid of the root. As long as you're going to hear music, as long as it's there, you can't get rid of that root.
If you just believe it,
and that story was filed by music journalist Ashley Kahn.
Earth and sky.
We know that the CO2 concentration in the atmosphere has gone up measurably in recent years. And we also know that it's not so much what's happened so far that's the problem. It's what's going to happen over the next 100 years if we don't start to manage the problem.
You're listening to John Barry with Shell. He leads one of Shell's efforts to manage carbon dioxide emissions thought to be changing Earth's climate. He spoke of carbon dioxide capture and storage.
Carbon dioxide capture and storage is one of the technologies that offers the most promise for making a difference to CO2 emissions in the short to medium term. And when I say that, I'm thinking 10 or 20 years. 100 years out, maybe there'll be technologies we haven't thought of today.
He said the best hope of capturing CO2 is what he called point sources.
Think of oil refineries in my own business. You know, they use quite a lot of energy to generate the fuel we use to drive our vehicles. And you actually have a hope of capturing that CO2 at the point source using some sort of a chemical technology to capture the carbon dioxide out of the exhaust gas and take it to a place where you can store it safely deep underground.
He said Shell is in an early stage of rolling out full-scale projects after proving each part of the technology over many years, and spoke of efforts underway in the U.S., Europe, and elsewhere. There's more at our website. I'm Joel Block for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from World Gourmet Foods, now in their new location at 105 Krispy Kreme Drive in Bloomington, serving the area with gourmet foods from around the world.